Let's start with the current face of the conflict in Ukraine. There is an article in Forbes. It says that a Ukrainian brigade has disintegrated with hundreds of soldiers surrendered near Progress.
Yeah, it's progress, you know.
What's going on, Andrei, right now in Ukraine?
Well, no, just physical annihilation of the armed forces of Ukraine and its curators, advisors, and in fact, part of the command corps from NATO countries. There was another attack on some gathering again near Kharkov yesterday. There were more than 100 killed, some of them up to 60, they say. They were British, American, and other officers, essentially. So, and mercenaries, as they call them. So, yeah, it just continues to, you know, demolish what's left. So, at Progress, they caught whatever, the 63rd Brigade, I believe. Two battalions have been completely surrounded. So, they either die or surrender. So, yeah, it's just, as I already stated, if you look at the statistics daily, daily losses of the armed forces of Ukraine, it means each day Russian armed forces erase one full brigade from the order of battle of the armed forces of Ukraine. And so they have now the situation with the personnel, a huge one.
Russia is on offensive right now. Is that right?
well, let me explain one thing. This is, how to put it, because it is the war of the 21st century, okay? And these are not American long fires, as it used in the field manuals in the United States. These are Russian long fires. And Russian long fires are massive. That is the standoff weapons and even artillery. The, for example, the latest variation of the self-propelled artillery, you know, system such as Koalitsa, it outranges pretty much anything in the world and by a huge margin. So it, when you look at this, and especially considering the rocket power, MLRS power of Russia, so as my friend who just returned from there, he said, Russians would love to sit in strategic defense, you know, and let Ukrainians come and kill them, you know, as it was happening for the last year and a half. The problem, he said, that by the time Russians are about to sit into this, you know, Ukrainians get demolished, you know, by the long range fires, and suddenly you have the, you know, distance and the ground you need to cover again. And they say, ah, damn it. And they have to move ahead again and start sitting up there by the time they do this. So at this stage, yeah, it's a, and again, make no mistake, strategic defense doesn't mean that you cannot conduct offensive operations. It absolutely doesn't preclude that. But yeah, it's a slow moving, you know, offensive, because their main objective, that's what many people still don't get it. It is not to cover the ground. Obviously, there are, you can liberate, for example, the rest. I mean, Lugansk Oblast is liberated practically 90% now. Donetsk is also, to a large extent. You need Zaporozhye, Kherson to liberate them. You can do it. You can do this thrust. You can do this, you know, large, big red arrows, you know, offensive. Russia has ability to do it on six operational axes simultaneously right now. The problem is, why would you kill your own people doing this? There is no point. And so the whole idea is not to cover the ground, which automatically will fall once, obviously, armed forces of Ukraine are annihilated. And that's what is happening. So the main objective, demilitarization, is, and I understand it sounds horrendous, but to kill as many enemies as possible. And Russians were doing just that, exterminating armed forces of Ukraine and those NATO people who are, you know, part of it.
Do you see any sign that Zelensky want to have some sort of political settlement?
Ah, BS, yeah. It's all fake. It's all PR. It's all crap. You know, so it's nobody buys it, you know, so... And yeah, he talked to Trump. Trump told him to shut it down, but Zelensky cannot do this because he will be immediately killed, you know. So it's all public, you know, the theater, complete theater, primitive one. It's a street theater level. It's not serious drama theater, you know. It's all garbage, you know. So, and yeah, he's not ready to do anything.
But it seems that Europeans are not willing to let Zelensky go after some sort of negotiations. What's the position of Europe right now? How we can understand the behavior of Europe? Because it seems that behind the scene they're trying to convince Zelensky to continue this conflict.
Well, let's be very straightforward. European elites consider Russians subhumans, okay? Untermenschen. So it's Europe is going back to its roots, you know, cultural roots, which gave us two horrendous world wars, with the last one seeing unprecedented cruelty and crimes against humanity on industrial scale. So it's normal for them. So, and basically all British, German, or French elites are like that. They consider Russians to be subhumans, and as long as they think that Ukraine can continue this with, you know, also annihilation of themselves. And again, you have to understand, none of them, including most of their military, they are incompetent people. They still think that Ukraine somehow fights. They don't understand strategy. They absolutely no clue about operational art and how those objectives are set up and how they're achieved. So they want Ukrainians to kill as many Russians as possible, because obviously they are under pressure from the United States. And in general, yes, let's say it what I'm saying all the time, and I wrote a book on that. Europe is a degenerate cultural political entity, and European Union, European Commission, it's something like sort of abomination. So Europeans wanted it. Majority of Europeans, many people like, oh no, we're not all like this. Well, I know you're not all like this, but 75% of Europeans want Ukraine to kill Russians. And again, Russians know it, and Russians don't have any illusions on this matter. And so they will continue to do it out of spite, out of pressure from the United States, and simply because they hate Russians and Russian people. Simple as that. There's nothing there super duper sophisticated. Plus, they have to have saved their regime, basically political regime in Europe. So, and it is what it is, and that's European choice. Scholz will be running again for chancellor. Guess what? He will be elected.
Joseph Borrell reported that 70% of Ukraine's energy facility have been destroyed during this conflict. And with the casualties, you look at the suffering, the devastation of the country, you see all of them together. You see how you can suggest to Ukraine to fight, like, because it's not, it's a machine out of gas, out of everything. Everything's broken. The nation has reduced to 20 million from 40 million to 20 million. It's unbelievable. And how in Europe they can convince themselves to do that. I'm not talking about Ukrainians.
Average European politician is a scumbag, okay? He will sell his family, his children, his whatever, so for whatever they think. And again, they are driven by the century-old hatred. And again, there is no rationale there. We know they are not rational. We know they are illiterate. They are all humanities degree, you know, degree meals who have no clue about anything. But you have to understand what Europe represents today, although there certainly applies to the United States too. It's a degenerate culture in general. So, and when you look at Anthony, when they look at this fairly conservative, you know, steady or nation state oriented entity such as Russia, they begin to hate it even more. Listen, let's put it this way. Europe is a Sodom and Gomorrah. And they, of course, you know how to put it politely. If to turn it into the biblical language, they would hate righteous. You know, so there you go. It's simple as that. Look at them. Look at von der Leyen. Look at Scholz, for example, in Germany. First, apart from them having the Nazi relatives and they obese people that, for example, they had to, reevaluate their life. They never reevaluated anything, So the same goes, look at Canada. It is as, cesspool of the former Nazi, criminals. And, so they applauded, they gave standing ovation to the SS, criminal. So, and wherever you go, it all comes down to the World War II. Many people do not understand why Europe didn't, resist. The reason they didn't resist is because they didn't have the impetus for that. Because for the general, in general sense, for them, Hitler was and Nazi Germany was closer culturally and in spirit than, for example, communist Soviet Russia. So in this case, yeah, French just surrendered. Now they still remember that De Gaulle and his division tried to counterattack. Oh my God, So there are numbers of the French resistance in World War II, by the way, started by Russian immigrant, Russian aristocrat. They were smaller than the several fold smaller than, for example, the practically French division, SS division, Charlemagne. And you look at this, and yeah, everything is back to square one. Hello, it's kind of natural for them. So, and again, they initiated the biggest slaughter in the human history, and they learned nothing, and they will learn nothing. So now they will change one type of fascism to another. So-called liberal fascism, and we already know. So they will all at some point of time will get their gender reassignment, and you will see yourself what is going on there. That's it. So that's who they are. And I'm not talking about this, exception of 25%, roughly quarter of normal, healthy people, morally, ethically, but majority of them are. So there you go.
We know that behind this behavior of Europeans is the United States, because without the United States, they're not capable of doing anything. Here comes the question. It seems that we have two options right now, Donald Trump and Kamala Harris. And it seems, Andre, it seems that both of them, even Kamala, if she wins, she's not gonna pursue Biden's policy, it seems to me, in Ukraine, because she has her way of thinking. It seems to me the way that she's talking about Ukraine is not the way that Biden was talking about Ukraine. How do you find Kamala's policy if she wins toward Ukraine?
Nothing gonna change. Nothing gonna change. It doesn't matter if it's Trump. Trump can say whatever he wants. His worth is really his word is not worth much. So because he makes grandiose statements and he doesn't understand what he's talking about. Kamala even worse. She's just yeah, she's not really mentally up to any kind of job. Forget about running country. No, nothing gonna change. Russians don't build any illusions on this matter. So yeah, they will try to continue to do what they're doing because obviously their interests, large financial interests of the U.S. military industrial complex are involved. At this stage, they are making killing. And Europe, plus, they kill Europe. United States is not interested in having the, competition in Europeans. And United States shouldn't worry about it. There will be no competition because actually is Europe is becoming a pauper anyway, so they're just, so no resources, no nothing which really makes you move forward, energy-wise especially. So, and in this case, why not? I mean, they will try to push them to commit suicide completely. But as Mr. Lavrov stated, United States obviously doesn't understand that if Europe does some stupid thing, United States gets it, And Russia has all means to basically, wipe the United States off the map. So, and so they will try continue to do it. They are we're looking at a complete degeneration of the political elites. They cannot think rationally, cannot think straight, and they are incompetent. That's the problem. They are utterly incompetent. Forget about being immoral, okay? Forget about this. We know they are amoral. They have no morality, no integrity, no humanity in them left. But they are incompetent, and especially militarily and economically. And, so they probably will continue to do the same thing until it's just Europe completely implodes, which it will. It's just a matter of time. And then we'll see what, let's see where it all goes. It goes to BRICS primarily. So, and
At least we know that who's going to be the vice president of Donald Trump, and both of them are against the conflict in Ukraine. At least they're talking about it, Andre. But on the Democratic part, we don't know still, as I mentioned before, we don't know still what Kamala's official policy would be toward Ukraine, the conflict in Ukraine, and the situation between Russia and Europe. Here comes, it's not just Ukraine, it's the situation, the security between Russia and Europe. This is important. And Vice President of Kamala, we don't know who's going to be the Vice President of Kamala. That may show us, that might show us what would be her position. But at the end of the day, there is a distinct, just you say there is no difference between them. Why? When one side is talking about it and saying that he's gonna put an end to this conflict, and the other side is not, is so hesitant to talk about it.
Trump cannot put the end to the conflict. It's typical Trump bravado. It's hot air, so because it's not up to him. So that's it. It's not up to him. He doesn't understand that. Or maybe he does, but he doesn't want to, portray himself as in a weak position. But he is in a weak position. His hand is absolutely weak. And it's up to Russia how to decide this conflict. The only saving grace for him is that he can go out and say, hey, you see, this American humiliation is, not on my watch. But and when you listen to him and J.D. Vance, when they talked to Fox News yesterday, I believe, he says that, well, actually, the reason it all happened because obviously they see how we're weak, we ran out from Afghanistan and things like that. Well, yeah, I mean, you couldn't win it for 25 years almost. Not five, but 20 plus years. No, actually, come to think about it, 23 years at least. So what are you talking about? Of course you are weak. Then suddenly he says, oh yeah, you fight Russian, they are machine which beat Napoleon and Hitler. Well, yeah, he's correct. Russians never compromised on their security. They trusted the West in 1990s. They got screwed over, so never again. So, and the question is now, he cannot settle it with Zelensky, because actually there, and he should know this. For crying out loud, he was the guy on whose watch Ukraine started to be armed to the hilt. All of it, flow of the weapons, of all those advisors in earnest. Before that, it did exist, no doubt about it. But it was on his watch where Ukraine was fully prepared to be thrown against Russia. It was on his watch. He has to ask Richard Grenell, who ran this whole damn operation, okay? How Trump destroyed all Russian-American relations by closing practically every single diplomatic mission in the United States. So the guy did it, okay? He can say, oh, yeah, I was sabotaged. Well, you collected, you chose your national security team. You chose the warmonger war criminal John Bolton, and all those people who literally he couldn't do anything. He was so, what's difference this time? What is the difference this time? Somebody think that he learned his lessons? Maybe, maybe not. That's the problem. As for Kamala Harris, I mean, you know what? I don't think so she can win. Because obviously all those polls are garbage, especially Reuters poll, which puts her ahead of Trump. But the point is that they cannot change things because too many financial and cultural even interests are involved. Plus, do not forget that GOP is, it's hugely Zionist influenced party. Well, Netanyahu, as even Scott Ritter says, I can quote Scott, he owns US Congress. He owns GOP. They are all, most of them are Christian Zionists, and AIPAC and neocons is their natural position. Few common sense members there, they do not make much difference. And GOP is should become Trump's party. Guess what? He will do nothing about it. He's Zionist himself. So there you go. And that will continue. So we have a combination of factors which affect this. So it will continue until there's nothing left in Ukraine. And it's already nearing this point, as you correctly stated. We do not even know now the actual number of Ukrainians who are left in Ukraine. It's probably that I heard the number 19 million, but it's probably somewhere around 15 now. We literally have the process of the depopulation of the country, pushed by European Union and NATO. So there you go. And when once there will be nobody to fight, and the front crumbles, which is in the progress, as I already stated, Russians are not in rush. You know, many people don't remember that there's 1981 surprise, which was, of course, you remember, 440 hostages, American and Canadian hostages taken by Iranians in 1979. And it was 440 days, I believe, which was the drama on Carter's administration. Watch this. Guess what? Iran showed Carter that they will not allow him, to be reelected. And guess what? They released all hostages on the day of inauguration of Ronald Reagan. So who knows? The Russians maybe just preparing some surprise either for the election day or for the whoever will be inaugurated. So why rush? So if I in on if I would be Vladimir Putin or sitting on the Security Council of Russia, I would suggest to do that. Say, why don't we prepare a present for the United States on the election day? Like a couple days before it, or during whoever is elected on inauguration. Hey, Iran did it. Russia certainly can do that.
When it comes to the conflict in Gaza, we know who's behind the support that goes to Israel. But who's behind this hatred against Russia? We talk about Zionists in the United States who are supporting Israel, who are in line with Israel, who are doing everything in favor of Israel. But who's behind this hatred, this unbelievable hatred against Russia?
Well, you have to keep in mind Zionists, because Russians have been always supporting actually the Arab causes. Okay, so it's a huge deal. Then you have this Jewish immigration from the former Soviet Union and Russian Empire, who still hold the grudge against the pogroms. They did take place, especially primarily in what today is Moldavia or Moldova. So they have this incredible grudge against Russia. And considering their overrepresentation, they really infest, American political institutions. So you get this input of this, absolute hatred. I will give you an example of Max Booth or Julia Joffe, and people of this nature. They are openly state that we hate Russians, we want them dead. And I can continue to, if you read my latest book, you will find it there. So this sentiment was always there, always. And it was always connected to some degree with the Zionism and Israel, including during the Cold War, like the right of the resettlement, Soviet Jews being imprisoned and all that. So it's traditional. And of course, there's, again, you have to understand, if you look at the Anglo-Saxon Protestant elites, for them, Russia is, how to put it politely, Russia stole the American thunder. It was the United States which was supposed to be this, thing, but suddenly, these were Russians who defeated Hitler. These were Russians who flew in space first. You know, these are the Russians who restored their country after being utterly demolished, you know, and things of this nature. And you look at this throughout the history, there is a lot of hatred. And especially when you are Protestant fundamentalist, you're that type, not only Christian Zionist, you know, but also this, you know, evangelical, you know, fundamentalist. People who look at those things from the point of view of rapture, all this, you know, these crazy ideas. So they look at the traditional Christianity in Russia, which is, of course, you know, and they hate it. That's why, for example, United States invested huge effort in persecuting even very much not pro-Russian, but Ukrainian Orthodox Church. They just simply did all they could to destroy it there. And they did all they could to corrupt, for example, I mean, global Orthodox Church, including the Patriarch Bartholomew, who is, people say openly, he's CIS. Okay? So it is all about destroying basically this type of the religious view, which of course came to be realized through the large portions of the Soviet period and, you know, especially now in Russian Constitution, which of course it's a conservative constitution for crying out loud. So you have suddenly people of the alternative lifestyle, which are large number and very prominent, who hate Russia. Rachel Maddow hates Russians because obviously she's a lesbian. Everybody knows this. She's an open. And then suddenly you have this. Remember what Obama did during the Olympic Games of 2013 in Sochi. So, you know, this is like broad hatred across the many people of the political and cultural spectrum. So, and it will continue until silent majority in the United States raises its voice and says that enough is enough, because you morons will bring us to the, you know, verge of the nuclear annihilation, you know. And again, you have to understand that many people in American administrations, they worry about, you know, rapture, you know, the end times. You know, these are people who are very badly educated, very uncultured. Most of the American political class is highly uncultured. It's very provincial in its outlook. So, and that's what you have. And they hate Russia. So it's a combination of many factors.
Yeah, the problem, Andre, that I don't understand is why these Jewish people who are originally from Russia and came to the United States, why do they hate Russia? Why? What's happening? Because Russia was on their part when they were fighting Nazis. It wasn't about Russia, it was about Hitler that was killing them. Why Russia? Why do they hate Russia?
Again, I said they want pogroms. It's their vehicle, the same as tragedy of Holocaust. They are the ones who created the Holocaust industry in the United States. You know, this is not to say that it didn't happen. It did, but obviously it wasn't the main point of the Second World War II, or Second World War. And so, yeah, these were Russians who were liberating Auschwitz, not Obama's uncle, you know. So, but yeah, they just hate. They hate, they have grudge, and they hate because obviously they never have been represented in Russia in the way they were thinking about, especially after Stalin purged Trotskyist and Trotskyist movement, which was to a very large degree driven by Jews in international Jews and Jewish organizations. So Leon Trotsky himself was a Jew. And so Stalin purged it because obviously, but again, it's difficult to explain to what Russian history is to average American. They is so beyond their, you know, reference points. They so do not understand what we are talking about, because it's complex. Russia is a huge country with enormous history and enormous military history. And when you look at this, many people will not simply grasp what is going on. And so those people, especially those former Trotskyists who have been purged by Stalin, they have grudge. They have grudge. They wanted, as Trotsky said, we use Russia as a kindle for the world revolution. The guy was absolutely nut job. He was definitely a very courageous man, and he wasn't by any means stupid, but he was a nut job. And guess what? One again, the avant-garde, so to speak, the people who were ahead of this, many of them were Jews, and Stalin purged them. Guess what? Many of them ended up in the United States. So apart from people who hate pogroms, naturally, which is nobody says that they should admire that, you know, but we have also the massive purge of the Jewish, people who wanted to be at the top of the political power in the Soviet Union. And this is what happened in 1930s. So there you go.
I think when history judge the conflict in Ukraine, they would say it's unbelievable when you see the people who were victim of Nazis are totally hand in hand with Nazis against Russia. It's unbelievable. This makes what's going on in Ukraine unbelievable. How is that even possible?
Oh, very possible, and the signs were already there, and it is how to put it politely. I'll give you just one example, okay? Just one example. Famous Antonov Design Bureau, which produced some out most outstanding planes in the world, including this famed AN-22 225. Maria, which is the dream in English, it's Maria in Ukrainian. It wasn't Ukrainian. It wasn't in the Soviet Ukraine until in 1950s. Actually, the whole Novosibirsk Design Bureau of Mr. Antonov have been moved to Kiev, as have been the reindustrialization of Ukraine happening at the expense of many actually Russian design bureaus, institutes, and things like that. The Kiev at some point of time was absolutely a hot seat of the scientific research, high-tech industry, you know what. So, but what the virus of the what is called the village culture, you know, that it's even worse than village, it's a farm culture, you know, hooter, you know. So these are primitives, you know, which have been brought up with Bandera in mind. These are the same people who committed the Volhynia massacre of Poles. These are people started to penetrate there, actually, especially those people with SS background who fought, for example, the 14th Waffen-SS Division Galichina, who were actually in Gulag, which have been under amnesty by Nikita Khrushchev. So, and guess what? They all at some point of time penetrated. Many of them became, you know what, I mean, exemplary communists, you know, and their children. But guess what? The ideology was always there. And once the Soviet Union collapsed, the signs were already there in 1970s, okay? So there you go. This whole culture captured it. And then, of course, when the Eastern part, which by the way, still identified themselves, despite the fact that they've been Russophone, many of them still identified themselves as Ukrainians, but they obviously didn't want to live with that. And you literally have this primitive farm village culture, which was imposed on Ukraine. It's in the simple words, obviously. It was much more complex. You can go out and read the Leonid Kuchma's the second president of Ukraine, his famous book, Why Ukraine is Not Russia. It is delirium. It's a pseudo-academic BS, you know, the contrived crap, basically. So, but yeah, this is what they wanted to think about themselves. They never recognized that it was, if not for Lenin and the early Bolsheviks and the policy of the Ukrainization, they would never, it's not even their territories, you know, Eastern Ukraine and what is called Tavrichskaya Guberniya, Tavrida governorship, which was established by Catherine the Great and Prince Potemkin, for example, okay? Odessa, you know, Mykolaiv, these are all Russian cities. So, and there you go. But again, Russia paid the price for that. Especially by electing first time this alcoholic and low-life Yeltsin. And then, of course, the United States interfering directly in 1996 elections, which Time magazine gladly put on the front page that we are the ones who elected Yeltsin. Okay? So you can look it up, it's all recorded, you know, everybody knows this. So they needed this destroy, and again, low-life, he was alcoholic, no honor, no nothing, just absolutely low life. So they needed him in Russia, and this is how the Ukraine essentially completely detached itself. And they thought that they can exist without Russia. They forgot that basically, practically everything they had was supplied in some way by Russia. And as a result, when it happened, I can tell you one thing, it's going to be back to its normal, which is a village rump of a country, primarily dealing with the agriculture. Okay. They will not be allowed any kind of critical strategic industries there, except for the present day territories which Russia acquired or returned rather home. And yeah, that's probably the best they can hope for. But in reality, it might cease to exist at all. You know, Russians do not want that. You know, that's the whole point. We discussed it a couple of days ago, Garland and Scott and me, and Scott correctly stated, Russians don't have any brotherly feelings towards them. For them, they are treasonous nations. They are not brothers. So there you go. And that's what is happening right now.
If you were to pick one of these the political parties in the United States who has more hatred against Russia, which one would be? And is there any difference between these two parties?
Oh, no, there is no difference in terms of it's just different kinds of hatred. Okay. But it's pretty much intense in terms of intensity, it's the same on both sides. So it's just that Biden family and, you know, they were running their own business, you know, money laundering through Ukraine and money laundering for Democratic National Committee. Republicans, most of them, they hate Russia because, yeah, they, as I already stated, they are Christian Zionists. They are primarily brainwashed, you know, Cold War warriors who never knew. They don't know any history or anything. They're, as I already stated, highly uncultured, highly uneducated people, most of them. So, and their hatred is, some of them, they still think that Putin wants to recreate Soviet Union. That's how brainwashed they are. So, and considering the overall degradation of the American society, we're not even going to Europe. It's complete. It's, you know, basket case there. So, but looking at how the United States degraded intellectually in the last 30 years, it's unprecedented. I never saw anything like this. It is literally mind-boggling. You know, I'm just looking at this as I cannot believe this, that this is happening. But yeah, that's who they are. So in terms of hatred, they both hate, but it's different type of hatred, you know, all the different foundations.
Can we say that the Democratic Party is more ideological toward any sort of conflict in the world, in Gaza right now, in Ukraine? But let's focus on Ukraine. They're more ideological when it comes to Ukraine, but the Republican Party is more practical. They know that the way that they're fighting in Ukraine, it doesn't end well for them. That's why it's not practical to continue this conflict. But the Democratic Party just doubling down based on their ideology. How do you find this difference between these two?
I think so. You nailed it. I think so. You nailed it. Yes. So as much as they hate Russia, GOP is more practical because, you know, many of them are from businesses and they got used to count their money. They are capitalists in a good sense. Most of the Democrats, I have no idea who those people are. You know, it's just absolute kind of, yeah, bizarre things like Obama, community organizer, who really, he was community organizer, okay? Obviously, he was a, you know, front for the DNC, but it's like, yeah, but there are many Republicans who are actually run businesses, and some of them successful businesses, and they can count cost and benefits, okay? So, and some of them, they do have, and they are in some sense, obviously patriotic people in their own way. So not all the Christian Zionists, they have loyalty to Israel primarily and whatever the hell their, you know, future life and, you know, in paradise and in heaven as they think, you know, so that's their loyalty. So and when you look at them, so sure, yeah, they're more practical. They understand that they were talking, at least, you know, making talk out of it. I don't know how sincere it was about the national debt, which, of course, you have to service. Once you stop servicing national debt, American economy collapses. So, and it's 30 trillion. Percentages on the debt are bigger than the budget of Pentagon. And budget of Pentagon is now above $1 trillion. So we already see the inflation going on there. Only imbeciles believe that inflation is not there. It is there. Hyperinflation is standing on the, standing start now, ready to go. And yeah, some of them, they understand that, they do. But you cannot fix the system because it is obviously, it's like, addict, final stages of addiction to the heroin. You cannot just quit anymore, and this will continue until the country collapses in terms of economically, which is actually happening as we speak. All this, fake economic indices, they're nothing. And that is why, for example, they cannot build a decent weapon system. Because it's actually already, by the time you start doing it, it has to be expensive anyway, because this is philosophy. But you literally get less and less bang for your buck. If people want to see their actual inflation and how it kills, for example, look no further than Pentagon and its procurement policies. It is all in there. You can compare those percentages, and yeah, United States can build, yeah, the whole bomber, $2 billion. I mean, really? It's just like you gotta be kidding, the pretty much useless aircraft, with all those bells and whistles, which think they do not work in modern war. But $2 billion, I mean, you kidding me? So you have the submarines, which are $4.5 billion per hull. You have the new strategic missile submarine of the, it doesn't exist yet, Columbia class. It's going to be $9 billion per single boat. Let me give you translation of this. For the same price of $9 billion, Russians built nine brand new state-of-the-art Barry class missile submarines, which are already afloat or are being ready to go to fleet. And these are state-of-the-art, cutting edge, probably the most silent submarines ever. So there you go. That tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah. When you look at the way that Ukraine is trying to put pressure on Orban and Fico by not letting the Russian gas get there, and do you think who's behind this decision on the part of Zelensky? Is NATO just telling him do this to?
Well, von der Leyen, all people of this nature, absolutely. That's
So
what they
the
do. And today, our foreign minister of Finland, she is pretty bizarre looking woman. I mean, you can see that she's not really like, she's crazy, okay? She said that, values of Hungary do not fit, values of the European Union. So what can I say? I mean, Orban, and he has to decide, Hungarian is probably not going to be very happy if it comes down to it. But Hungary has no other choice in the long run as to basically plug itself into BRICS, and it's happening as we speak already, so. And what can I say? I mean, it's inevitable probably if they want to survive as a nation. Okay, and if they do not want their children to be, reassigned the genders and to live in this concentration camp of the political correctness and suffocating culture of, yeah, so what can I say? So, well, they probably, it's up to them, obviously.
And the other thing that is so important right now is the role of Russia and China in the conflict in Gaza, and how China brought all these different groups in Palestine, in Gaza, together to make some sort of agreement among them. And on the other hand, we see, and we know that when something like this happens, like what has happened between Iran and Saudi Arabia, is Russia is part of what's going on there. And right now, Bashar al-Assad is in Russia. He's gonna talk with Erdogan. And on the other hand, you see Netanyahu in the United States trying to picture for the Congress, Let's go attack in Iran. Let's fight. How do you
Yeah.
see the changes that are happening? These people, the way that Russia is trying to bring these people together, China is trying to do the same. On the other hand, you see in the United States they're talking all about war, war, war. Nothing else. Not negotiation, not political settlement, nothing less than war.
Well, it's Netanyahu. I can only quote Scott, and I agree with him. Netanyahu bought US Congress. It's in the pockets of the AIPAC and Israel. And Israel always viewed the United States as its, a bully, which it can unleash. United States foreign policy is completely subverted by the AIPAC and Israeli interests. What can I say? I mean, Netanyahu wants to leave. He doesn't want to end his life behind bars, but while trying to avoid it, he destroys Israel, and probably Israel now is set for bound for the dissolution, essentially, as per all those Fatah and Hamas and other factions on the Palestinians, it started actually in Moscow. In China, they already simply signed the final agreement, which is now basically, and again, make no mistake, I'm not a specialist in the area, so I can only defer to, again, to Scott or Larry Johnson, in terms of what is going on there. So yeah, you have now essentially political Palestinian state emerging. Okay, so that is huge. And then of course now we have, yeah, Erdogan and Assad, my gosh. These are very bad news for Kurds, actually, so well, they wanted it, yeah, that will be this unification and calming down of the whole BRICS, or Eurasian realm, by Russia and China, and to make it more livable, more peaceful, stable, and things of this nature. For Israel, as I already stated, they want Iran. United States, when they talk about war, we have to understand the difference. United States is not capable to conduct the set of combined arms operation of the scale designed to defeat Iran. The only thing United States can do in life is to bomb defenseless people. That's it. Any ground force. American ground force. We're not talking about IDF. IDF is it's yeah, it's a joke. Okay, so they will not be. They better not go against Hezbollah. They will be completely devastated there. So, but the point is, yeah, the ideas. Okay, let's put some American troops, boots on the ground in Iran. It's gonna end up very bad for them. Okay, very, very bad. So, and the only thing they can do is to bomb, launch, some missiles, and because of the size of the country, they will run out of it pretty fast. So, other than that, that's the only thing they can do, and that's the war in their opinion. But the point is, the moment they bomb Iran, things will start to go really haywire for United States, because Russia is not going to allow Iran to be harmed in such a way that it will be, literally on the verge of regime change or whatever. So the only thing they have left is indirect strategies, which they always do. They are good at killing, assassinating people, fomenting trouble, paying all kinds of the so-called oppositions and things of this nature. But Russia is more in the hard kind of way support, like S-400s, definitely first Su-35 started to arrive, so and things of this nature. So yeah, good luck with them with this war. But once this war starts, yeah, United States will collapse economically, because it is clear that the Strait of Hormuz, Persian Gulf will be closed, period. And nothing you can do about it. And then whatever is going to happen with some of the US Navy ships, we don't know. It's not going to end up well for the United States, because it will escalate to the nuclear threshold, because United States is not designed, is not conditioned to fight the conventional war of attrition. And Iranians, guess what? They are designed specifically for that. The first thing the United States will get, all their Middle Eastern bases will be attacked, and that will not be anymore, like it was there in 2020. There will be no warning this time, and those missiles will fly, and there's nothing United States can do to intercept them. So the escalation is there. Well, Israel will get it too, and so yeah, it's not going to end up well. Let's put it this way.
It seems that Netanyahu tried to do everything to defeat Hamas, which wasn't possible for him. And they're suffering a lot in Gaza, despite killing many people, civilians, women, children. And but they were not able to defeat Hamas. And right now, right after Hamas, they were talking about Hezbollah. They were changing the rhetoric toward Hezbollah to bring the United States in politically and militarily. Because if the United States goes after Hezbollah, nobody in the United States, in the European Union, would talk about against Israel because the United States is part of the conflict. And you see all these protests against Israel would come down and just dissipate. That's why it's the political reason behind, in my opinion, what Netanyahu is doing right now. And when Biden said, if you go after Hezbollah, we're not going to be there to defend you, or we're not going to put troops on the ground to fight. Right now, he's changing toward Iran because it seems really the ultimate goal would be Iran. Right now, the United States is going to come in and fighting Iran, that nobody would be able to protest anything against Iran, Hezbollah, or it's unbelievable. I don't know if in his mind is this way that he's trying to by changing the rhetoric, by shifting it from Hamas to Hezbollah, right now to Iran, to do everything possible to bring the United States into the conflict politically and militarily.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, they wanted to move the carrier battle group, to Mediterranean, to evidently planning to attack Hezbollah. But then again, United States doesn't have the real first. It doesn't have the desire to do it specifically to put any boots on the ground because they will be. Yeah, that will be the type of the losses United States never experienced before. And again, don't forget, they're all considering Iranian development of the missile weapons. Some of them are really high-level missile technology. They get it. The moment it starts, the all American bases in the Middle East go in flames. And Israel goes in flames immediately. So, well, yeah, as I already stated, United States can launch some Tomahawks and they can fly missions from the deck. That's about the extent of the capabilities of modern American military. I mean, good luck putting boots on the ground. See for yourself what's going to happen in Congress. So, hey, at least Democrats, half of the Democrats didn't even go to listen to Netanyahu. And some Democrat women came up with, this little thingy, war criminal. That's like, interesting. Somebody have guts, to do that. So, and what can I say? Sure, let them try. And again, once the whole thing starts, oil prices, skyrocket, and United States economy, well, it's grind to a halt. I'm not even talking about Israel. Israel will be lost forever. It's going to be the new scattering for them, and it's already beginning to happen. But I mean, that will accelerate dramatically, So, because we saw ourselves how the mythology of the Israeli air defense have been blown out of the water, and they've seen nothing yet. Okay, so there you go. And then again, there's another thing. Hezbollah definitely has the Onyx missiles. They have the expert version of missiles, which are 300 kilometer range. Who knows if they will get the latest version, which is 800 plus kilometer range. And then that's no matter how you do, yeah, it's a very dangerous game. But Netanyahu, come on, he doesn't want to end up behind bars, so. And the IDF knows how to fight, backward militaries, so when they get Hezbollah is a very serious military force, and some of those people are tough as nails, they are ready to die, and they are ready to sacrifice, and they're ready to fight. And I mean fight. These guys are real deal.
And if, Andre, if we suppose something happens between Iran and Israel and United States, how we can imagine the behavior of Saudi Arabia and Turkey and UAE? Do you think they're going to let the United States using their territory in order to attack Iran?
I really doubt it, honestly, but I don't know. I honestly don't know. I really do not know internal dynamics in UAE, and Moscow and UAE. They have a very good relations. Very good relations. They are kind of well established. Very. So there's a lot. A lot will depend on Moscow also. And for Saudi Arabia, oh, I don't think so. I really don't. Oh, my gosh, do not forget, those people might not like it at all. And who knows what other organizations, there are many factions, there are many organizations which are fundamentalist Islamic organizations, Wahhabi in nature. Oh, my gosh, that's totally different story.
Yeah.
So, yeah, difficult to say. I don't know.
They may provide intelligence, in my opinion, but they would not get involved militarily in such a conflict
No, no,
because
no, I don't.
that would just tell Houthis, take care of Saudi Arabia and UAE. And nobody
Oh,
cares.
no,
No
yeah,
one
and
else would.
yeah, they are very near Iran. Ranges of Iranian missile weaponry cover it all, so as a whole. So, and Iran built up the major arsenal of those things, So, yeah, I don't think so. Saudi Arabia is eager to help in any way. So, and MBS has better things to attend to, including how to defuse this whole bomb of Islamic fundamentalism and, maybe somehow reform the Saudi Arabia, which he tries to do, which is good. Hey, sure, absolutely. So, and he really wants to be part of BRICS. I mean, big time. So.
I think one of the very important points that you've just mentioned is the Mohammed bin Salman is the crown prince of Saudi Arabia. He's so smart. He knows what's going on right now in the world. That's why he wouldn't get involved in any sort of conflict because that would be the end of their prosperity that they have been
Yeah.
fighting for such a long time.
Yeah. So he is definitely a very shrewd politician, and he definitely got a bad rap, especially after the Khashoggi murder assassination. Although it's as Dr. Khadra Kumar stated that essentially he was a CIA asset. His main task was to foment trouble in Saudi Arabia against MBS. So hey, they murdered him. That's what you do, in the serious politics when you have the threat to the power. So, yeah, he's a smart guy. He definitely knows where it's all going. So, and he has obviously this huge problem with Saudi Arabia being this sort of on the leash of the United States, plus the issues of the family, and everybody in Saudi Arabia is somebody's prince or heir to whatever, So, and he knows that until he keeps the prosperity going, he has a chance. How he will do it, I don't know. I never was to Saudi Arabia, I probably will never be there. So, it's a pretty enclosed society. So, but yeah, he understands where the geopolitical winds blow. He wants to be the part of BRICS and probably at some point of time to be part of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which obviously a strong security element to SCO there, especially in terms of the maintaining internal stability of the member states. And that's MB what MBS really needs, So how it will work out, I don't know.
Yeah. Here comes the position of Putin right now in bringing Erdogan and Bashar al-Assad together, which is so important for Gaza, for Hezbollah, for the situation with Iran right now. I think they're just planning for any sort of conflict if the United States and Israel go after making some sort of war in that region.
Yeah, absolutely. That will be on the table. That will be discussed. And Erdogan better start, choosing chairs he sits on. He was too multi-vector, to put it mildly, for his own good. I mean, and probably he will be also put in the position to make, some kind of the final orientation and choices. But I don't know. We'll see how it will go,
Yeah.